Beckett's throw, looking.
Deep pattern.
Downfield touchdown, Miami. What a throw, Devontae Parker.
Holy smokes, what a drive.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins official podcast network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins, each and every day. How's it going, everybody? It is Friday. I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and I am here to bring you your daily dose of Miami Dolphins football. And on today's show, we're going to hear from OJ McDuffie of the Fish Tank Podcast and, of course, of Miami Dolphins lore. We're going to talk about the 1994 AFC wildcard playoff game, the victory over the Chiefs, Dan over Montana, a great game to talk about. OJ talks about a linebacker for the Chiefs in that game that maybe was hunting him down the rest of his life after a block that OJ put on Derek Thomas in that game. We'll talk about that and much, much more. Get you the latest on injuries for Dolphins and Chiefs on Sunday. All of that and more on this Friday, December the 11th edition of the Drive Time Podcast.
That's another Miami Dolphins.
Drive Time is brought to you by AutoNation. Hey Dolphins fans, the new year starts now at AutoNation. Let's skip the rest of 2020 and get to big new year savings on your favorite AutoNation Chevys, Fords, Toyotas, Hondas, and much, much more. Shop safely at the AutoNation store near you or AutoNation.com and save now. Let's go ahead and get the injury latest for Friday. The final game status report is available right now, and for your Miami Dolphins, Eric Flowers and Savon Ahmed are going to be out for this game. They will not play on Sunday. Both linebackers Elandon Roberts and Kyle Van Noy returned to practice on Friday. They are listed as questionable for the game against the Chiefs. As for the Chiefs themselves, Damian Wilson was the only limited participant in practice. We'll get a game status for him for you guys on Top News up on MiamiDolphins.com. And riding shotgun now on the Drive Time Podcast is a special guest. We hear from him every Friday on Flashback, but this Friday, we have OJ McDuffie from the Fish Tank taking us back through the 1994 AFC wildcard playoff victory over the Kansas City Chiefs. OJ, what's up, man?
What's up, Travis? How you doing, baby?
I'm good. It's good to see you. Friday's always a fun time here on the podcast. We get to kind of let our hair down, talk about some Dolphins football, get ready for a big game coming up like we have on Sunday against the Chiefs. But we're going back to 94 on this podcast and talking about a game that you played in. And you were texting me a little bit before we jumped on the podcast here, and you went back and watched this game in its entirety, right?
I did, man. I enjoyed every minute of it, man. It's one of my favorite games of all time. It takes a little time, some time to remember some things that happened, but when you watch it back, you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that too, man. And it was one of those great games, Montana versus Marino, you know, fighting for who could get to the next level in the playoffs and hopefully to the Super Bowl, with the Super Bowl being right here in our own backyard. It was one fun-ass game.
I have to imagine that for an ex-professional athlete like yourself, like you said, how much fun it is to go back and watch that. Because, like, I'll go see, like, I've got the VHS tapes from my high school days, like, that are the best thing in the world to watch to watch myself play at, like, 18 years old. But being in an NFL game, a playoff game, especially on a national stage, I mean, does that ever get lost on you, or is it still just really cool to know that you were part of that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes you forget about it, and it's so funny because I was watching that game, and I showed my kids who never seen me play, they weren't born yet, you know, a couple of those clips, you know. There's a clip of me hitting Derek Thomas one time where I knocked the snot out of him, and I said, man, I told you boys I was tough. Look at me hit this linebacker right here. Not needless to say, though, Derek Thomas was looking for me the rest of my life, you know, I rest his soul, you know, because of that hit. He's a South Floridian, so I was worried about Publix, you know, if he's going to run into me there, nightclub, he might run into me there, a charity event. You know, I thought he was going to try to get back at me, man. But to show the kids that game and some of the plays that I made in that one, it's always fun to flashback at times.
That reminds me of there was a great mic'd up clip with Chad Ochocinco and Ray Lewis where Chad cracked Ray Lewis, and he goes, "I tried to go up against Ray and I lost, but you but you got Derek and you got him." So you had the head in the swivel the rest of the game. Like, was he coming for you?
You know, I don't know. I hope he was paying attention to me and not worrying about getting at Danny or, you know, stopping the run game. You know, I hope I was a little bit of distraction, but I know for sure that I was running from his ass.
He's one of the best linebackers of all time. Good matchup there. I always enjoy watching the run blocking that occurred back then with the receivers, and they do it today as well, but you guys definitely had a different task, different role back then. Let's go ahead and jump right into this game, OJ. You had mentioned that you were super fired up for this podcast, and that was a big reason why, but you also mentioned there was a different sense of urgency around this game and a little more intensity than maybe a usual playoff game. And I know you talked about Marino versus Montana. It was the first time they had gone up against each other since that Super Bowl. Was that kind of the sense of the urgency, or where did that urgency come from in this game?
Yeah, we knew that. You know, our team was stacked. You know, we knew the year before we had one of the better teams. We went into week 11 or 12 with the best record in football, and we lost the last five games. And we had a home playoff game here. You know, Montana had already had a couple – Super Bowl championships, and we knew that, you know, Danny was still fighting to get his. So it was a huge game for Schottenheimer versus Don Shula. Shula had the torn Achilles in this game, you know, had the little scooter that game. And it was just a big game, especially having a home playoff game. You get an opportunity to play at home, you know, against a team that you just beaten. It was just a great opportunity for us. And we thought we had that team that can make it all the way through and play a home Super Bowl.
They showed him on the cart in that game, and you know he was still doing his same thing, chewing guys out, getting in the ref's ear, and making his presence felt. When he was on that cart, was there any difference from a player's perspective about the way Don Shula was?
No, he saw everything still. You could still hear his voice from anywhere on the field or in the stadium, you know. And he wasn't as mobile, but hey, man, when he got that cart, because remember originally he was in a golf cart, and that was just a little too bulky, and then he got that little whatever scooter that he got, and then. There was no hiding from him at that point, man. But the intensity was always there, and he found you. If you did something right or wrong, he found you.
Well, he did it in this game. We'll get to that here in just 1 second. But to kick the game off, I mean, you know, we see offensive explosions pretty much every single week in the NFL these days. But I watched that primetime highlight, and they were going back and forth showing how impressive the offensive success was for either of those teams. So the Chiefs go down and score the opening possession for a touchdown. But you guys come right back. And I found this part interesting on that same highlight with Chris Berman, and it was Joe Theismann filling in for Tom Jackson this week. He says, Marino comes right back with a bunch of guys you've never heard of. Mike Williams with the reception. And I was wondering how you would respond to that comment, because there were plenty of guys on that team, yourself, Irving Fryer, Keith Jackson. These are players that, you know, even a 7-8-year-old kid like myself knew at the time. So what's he talking about? Like, how would you respond to that in 1994 if someone, a sportscaster, told you these are a bunch of guys no one's ever heard of?
Yeah, you know what? It's not a very flattering thing to say. And, of course, you know, I'm not a very flattering person at times. But at the same time, though, I mean, I think they really were talking about the fact that Terry Kirby was out. And so Bernie Parmody was our running back. Keith Byers was out. James Saxon was our fullback in that game. You know, so we did have some key players out, but there was so much attention paid to Irving Fryer and at times myself and Keith Jackson, that guys like Mike Williams made big plays. Guys like Irvin Spikes, the running back, was able to make some big plays. Scotty Miller had a big first down in that game as well, wide receiver. So I get a bunch of nobodies because he's never heard of them, but I've seen those guys work in practice and they were ready. When I got to the Dolphins, guys like, you know, Mike Williams, Johnny's his brother, Mike Williams and Scotty Miller were the ones that taught me the offense. You know, they knew more about the offense than about anybody did. So they were ready to play. They just didn't get the opportunity because, you know, as Seth would say, a first-round pick came in like myself, or we traded for a guy like Urban Fryer and kind of bumped him out of the rotation.
Hey, you know, it seems like the Dolphins over, if you want to go this direction in the 90s, you know, the no-name defense in the 70s is legendary. If you want to go that direction in the 90s with plenty of playoff appearances, and then now in 2020, this defense that's ranked second in the NFL in scoring, you know, I've heard on national shows, like, they've got a bunch of names that no one's ever heard of. Hey, if that's going to be our badge, let's wear it, man. Like, I'll take that. As long as we're winning football games, I don't give a damn. So
right, and I think that's important, Travis. I think it's really important to have a bunch of nobodies because, you know, you don't have the ego problems that you have when you have a bunch of somebodies, you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You know, you and I before and talked about what happened to our 93 team. I think we had too many name guys on that 93 offense, and with only one football, it's tough to keep everybody happy. And I think that was our downfall and didn't make the playoffs in 93. I think we still had quite a few of those guys at the end, but when we had those no-name guys, quote-unquote, they were the ones that were catalysts for our success in that playoff game.
Yeah, you can put together a roster almost by design that way, right? Like, I think, and not to keep going back to current team, but Brian Flores, I think, has done a good job of making it more about the team and having guys that buy into that team first mindset over, you know, a star-minded mindset. And maybe go off a tangent here, OJ. Like, have you been around a team or a player where there was a guy that maybe thought that the rules didn't apply to him? And I know, you know, Jimmy Johnson would always say, one guy's made this team. He's number 13, Dan Marino, or whatever his, you know, famous comment was. But have you been around a situation where a player like that maybe wasn't the best? Like, he was good on the field, but maybe the overall net gain wasn't there because he was a problem off of it?
Yeah, I've had a couple teammates that were eye guys, you know what I mean? And it's kind of strange because, you know, you look at football and it's the cliche, the ultimate team sport, but some guys thought it was all about them. You know, especially like I said, on the offense side of the ball, defense is different. Defensive guys, they rally with each other. They go out there and, you know, they do their job. They cover, they rush the pass, or they make tackles. But on offense, you know, you got a bunch of guys that want the ball in their hands, you know, then they become less team players. You know, you're supposed to be running off as a wide receiver on the backside to protect the guy on the front side, and you don't do it because your number's not called. That's a big problem. And we did have a couple guys like that. And it became a problem in the huddle. I know Danny had to deal with it before I got there, sometime with Duper and Clayton. But when I got there, and it was Urban Fryer, Mark Ingram, and Keith Jackson, Keith Byers, Terry Kirby. I mean, that one football, man, we had to stretch it a long way to make everybody happy. And it's not a good situation a lot of times.
Yeah, the current Dolphins receivers coach Josh Grizzard calls them brotherhood routes. You have to run routes sometimes that aren't. It's not designed to get you the ball in the progression, but you have to do it to hold defenders in certain spots, whether it's zone coverage or, you know, whatever it might be. It's 11 guys doing their job. It's that's what's fun about football. That's why I love it so
do
much.
Your job. Exactly right. Do your job.
But let's go back to the game here and kind of, you know, it's funny we go no name because you mentioned Urban Fryer, a name that we all know. And he makes a catch on the opening drive to get the Dolphins into scoring range, but he does something that brings back memories of another earlier Dolphins team, and Berman once again on the highlight mentions it. Duriel Harris to Tony Nathan, he says, almost two decades earlier. We talk about Shula on the cart. Like, I have to imagine he came over to the sideline after that hook and lateral attempt and maybe got an earful.
Yeah, you know what? And we did it again the next weekend too in San Diego. And that was that would end up being a forward lateral that ended up being a fumble.
Yeah.
Because it was a forward lateral, we got the ball back. So, I mean, that got to his head, especially the fact that Urban lateraled it to James Saxon. You know what I mean? A fullback that has some of the worst hands, I think, in football. I mean, that was a risky move right there. But Sax was ready, made a play. But, yeah, Shula, you know, we weren't about all that flair. And, yeah, of course, that one play with, you know, with Duriel and Tony Nathan goes back in the day. You know what I mean? But at the same time, though, man, it was about – you know, playing the game the way it's supposed to be played. Irvin had all that yardage. We didn't really need that at that point. But Saxon almost scored on that play, but Shula wasn't about that most of the time.
Yeah, I didn't know about that until I went back and watched it. And it's funny you mentioned the Chargers game because when I was on YouTube watching the game, it said next video available was the 1994 divisional round. And OJ, I hate to tell you this, but that's actually my first like live Dolphins memory that I have was Stojanovic missing that field goal in that game. And I had to watch the highlight again because I didn't remember the game very well because I was like 7, 8 years old. But there was a couple of plays where they showed you kind of getting fired up and they showed the forward lateral. I couldn't understand the way that ruling was made, but hey, you know, good for us.
Right.
But you think that had something to do with the lateral decision there? Like, we did it last week, we can do it again?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. It was successful the week before, and I think it was Irvin and Keith Jackson this time in that situation. But, yeah, I think once you start doing stuff like that, it's kind of like the behind-the-back pass in a basketball game. It worked before, and we do it again, and usually it ends up in a turnover, and that's what it was almost disastrous for us right there.
Yeah, it was funny. I saw the highlight, and I was like, what is he doing? He threw the ball like 5 yards forward, but hey, it worked out. I guess it didn't work out in the end, but on that play, it did. So you guys go back down, tied up, but the Chiefs come right back down the field, a 57-yarder for Kimball Anders. And Juice, you know, going back to Shula again, and I don't think I've ever seen Brian Cox make a worse tackle attempt in his career. He's known for blowing guys up, but he kind of comes in with the shoulder and just bounces off Anders on this play. And then Shula does chew him out. And as an offense, how do you guys respond when something like that happens where a big play goes on the field after you just get in the end zone? Like, is that very deflating?
No, our offense just won the damn ball back. You know what I mean? We didn't care how it happened. You know, if you get a 3-and-out, you know, you punt it to us, we'll take it. Or if they score a touchdown, we're going to try to come right back and score two. You know, Brian Cox is the heart and soul of that defense. you know. So we know that, you know, if he didn't make a play, he'd find a way to make up for it later in the game. You know, I remember that play when I was watching it the other day. It's like, you know, he kind of knocked him out of Troy's tackle. Troy Vincent was about to make the tackle, and Beacock bumped him down the sideline, and then he was off to the races. But, you know, we're grown men. And I saw as a rookie, I saw how these grown men coaches and grown men players got into it. You know, the arguments were legendary. The four-letter words they used were unbelievable. I couldn't believe that these guys talked to their coaches like that. So Shula felt comfortable getting into Brian like that. And Brian understood that he messed up, so he had to go out there and kind of make amends. But that was part of the NFL game in a lot of locker rooms. There was no cursing at Penn State. Not one coach or player were allowed to cuss. But when I got to the NFL and in Shula's locker room, man, it was very interesting.
What was it? Was it mostly Brian or was it a lot of guys?
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys. I mean, I heard Danny and, you know, Gary Stevens getting to a big time argument, you know, in a meeting, you know, and there were no kind words used either way. You know, it was just like anybody was able to go out there, and it was shocking to hear the amount of language that's used in some of those locker rooms. Whereas, you know, there's other locker rooms I've heard that there was, you know, very little of that, but ours was a bunch of grown men that had a lot on their minds, put it that way.
So this is probably a question for him, but he's not here today. Seth always joins us on these Flashback Fridays, but you guys were together, you know, I guess, co-workers, I guess. Is that the term for it? I
mean, absolutely.
Yeah. So did you ever see Seth like catch an earful from someone or get chewed? Because Seth told me once, you haven't worked in the NFL until you've gotten chewed out by a head coach. I'm wondering if you ever saw anything with him and someone giving him the business.
Oh, I didn't, man. Seth usually played it pretty cool, man, and he usually does things by the book, so it's hard for him to get chewed out. But, you know, sometimes you can do everything perfect, Travis, and you still get chewed out. And so I'm sure he caught some from Harvey. I'm sure he caught some from Jimmy. I mean, who knows, man? But a lot of times it was never in my presence, but Seth, like he always does, handled like a champ, sure, man. But, yeah, I know Harvey had to give him the business on quite a few occasions.
He's told me about a few of them, and maybe one of these days in the offseason we can have a crossover podcast where we just go into Seth's vault and let him be the interview subjects.
I'm sure I told him, man. I said, we got to, you know, who is Seth Levin? We got to do a podcast with him because he's got some great stories, man. And, you know, he likes to be behind the scenes too much at times. I said, we got to put you out there at some point, brother.
He's so modest. I told him that I was going to buy the Seth shirt from the fish tank, the merch. And he goes, I told him no one's going to buy that shirt. But if Travis gets one, so I still got to make good on that and get the Seth shirt for him. Cause he was saying nobody's going to buy that one, but I'm going to support my guy, you know?
That's what's up.
so back in the game, you know, we saw the game on Sunday with Miami getting a little bit chippy with the Bengals. And this one was kind of the same as well. And I'm curious if you started this because of your crackback on Derek Thomas, but Willie Davis and Gene Atkins start throwing blows at one point in this game. Do you remember that? And was that kind of festering over? And what was the mindset as far as like the balance of, well, we do want to keep this intensity, but we also don't want to get ourselves into a personal foul situation?
Yeah, it's a tough situation, actually. And you really have to set a tone. And I think my block in the first quarter set a tone at one point. I actually had another block on a kickoff return for Irvin Spikes that, you know, you got to try to rough guys up. I think once you start laying that wood on some of those, you know, DBs, their wide receivers want to do the same with our guy, you know. And that's a great, great message to send out there. You know, let them know it's going to be a long game. It's going to be 60 minutes, and I'm not going to give up or let up the whole time. So, you know, setting that tone on a linebacker and then seeing it on replay and then hearing the crowd's reaction, I mean, that made their sideline mad and it made us hype. So, I mean, playoff game, the intensity was unbelievable. You could hear the crowd was just incredible. It was so loud there. And, I mean, you got Marino and Montana. But, yeah, setting that tone right away, let them know it's going to be a long-ass afternoon is huge. And my wide receiver coach, it was Larry Seipel then, but, you know, Coach Robert Ford with Jimmy Johnson, you know, our job is to set the tone. You know, we got to run all day, and we got to set the tone in the secondary. And I think it carried over to both sides of football.
You saying that kind of reminds me of like in baseball when someone gets thrown at, the job for the pitcher the next inning is to go out there and throw at someone else on their team, kind of like that back and forth balance of you know, the game within the game. And I think you saw that in this one certainly, and one of the big aspects of this game, of course, was the offensive fireworks. And later You guys are on a crucial touchdown march, and you guys would tie it up, and you had a catch on 4th and 3. And again, back to Berman and Theismann, they both raved on the highlight about your ability to win on 3rd downs, or in this case, 4th down, even more of a money down play. What was it about the money down that brought out your best juice? Like, that seemed to be when you really shined to the, or rose to the occasion and shined brightest.
Yeah, I loved it. You know, I mean, what I love most about it, too, Travis, is the trust that Danny had in me. You know, he knew I was going to be in the right place at the right time. If I was a little short when I caught it, I was going to do everything I could to get to the sticks, you know, or run my route at the sticks and make sure I got a couple yards more, so it's not even a question. And that was key. I think at some point in my career, it was over 75% of my catches were for 1st down.
Wow.
You know, and then it, you know, the more I started playing on 1st and 2nd down, it kind of dipped. But when I was just mostly playing on 3rd down, I mean, that was my job to move the chains. And so that was always something I relished. And I know a lot of times there's going to be hella coverage on me, usually 2 sets of eyes. You know, there's a guy over me and there's got to be help somewhere. So I had to really pay attention to all that and still find my mark. And Danny found a way to fit it in a lot of times. So, but that was the fun part of it. You know, they used to call me a possession receiver, right? I said, yeah, I make sure we keep possession of the football. That's my job. And that's what we did.
Now, you can't give up points if your offense is on the field. I'm wondering if this is a comparison you've heard, or if you like it. If you don't like it, you can tell me as well. But there was on that play, you catch it and you kind of square up to maybe try to locate the defender, and you almost retreat a little bit. But then once you realize there's no one around you, you immediately get north and south. And OJ, it reminded me of Jarvis Landry. Have you heard that comparison before?
Yeah, you know, we're both nicknamed Juice, you know what I mean? So it kind of carries over. And, yeah, and that's one thing about it because, you know, Chap, I wasn't going to outrun anybody. I'm not bigger than anybody. So I might as well just lower my head, bring back my old running back days, and get as much as I can straight ahead, man. And, you know, it's always important to know your position on the field, but you're right. On that play, if I recall, because I was watching it the other day, it was a hot route. So we had one hot coming off my edge, and Danny had to get the ball to me right now. So I was a little bit short. I had it, and then I retreated like you talked about. But then I said, man, let me just get north and south, get as much as I can, and keep this thing rolling, man. But, yeah, Juice Landry is one of my favorite players of all time, man. And, you know, it's good to see him still playing well.
Yeah, he's one hell of a competitor. I think that's why the comparison's so apt with you guys, the way you guys both play the game at that high energy, that high level. I'm sure defensive backs, you know, both for you and Jarvis had to make plenty of business decisions in their career.
They better keep their head on the swivel. That's for damn sure.
That's right.
You know, we talked about my hit earlier. My hit I had on Derek Thomas is illegal now. I get fined and probably kicked out of the game this day and age. But Jarvis has had some borderline ones himself. And I love his energy and his attitude when he was here. And it continues up in Cleveland.
Definitely. And you know, going back to the game, you guys take the lead in the 4th quarter on a touchdown pass from Dan to Irving. And we had Irving on the podcast over the summer, and that confidence hasn't gone anywhere. I told him about a play where somebody pressed him or gave him outside access. He goes, they didn't give me that access, Travis. I took that access.
That's right.
That was a great quote. How did he change the offense? Maybe what did you learn from playing with Irving Fryer on your team?
Man, what a professional. I mean, Urban Fryer, man, what he had gone through in his life before he came to Miami and how he changed his life when he got to Miami and became the ultimate professional, the greatest pro, man, and taught me how to work out there. This guy at his age, you know, he got here, what was he, in his 30s when he got here? Nobody outworked him in the weight room, the running, you know, the work before practice, the work after practice. I mean, he was so much fun to watch, and he was – one thing Urban told me, like, which is funny, is that he said – you know, Juice, man, they told me I lost a step. I said, and how do you respond? He said, I had a step to lose. You know what I mean? I went from running 4.2 to 4.3 to maybe to 4.4, but I had a step to lose, you know? And he's right. You know, you had to pay attention to what he was doing, man. He was still so fast, super strong, ran great routes, and he would knock the snot out of people, man. And that's where that blocking intensity came from, wide receivers on that secondary. Irvin was hitting defensive ends and linebackers too. I mean, he was just a great teammate to have, and I couldn't ask for a better person to learn from when I first got into the NFL.
Yeah, it makes for a good pairing when you guys are both out there doing that, forcing defensive backs. So like you said, keep their head on a swivel. And one defensive back that kept his head on a swivel in this game was J.B. Brown, who grabs a pick in the end zone that looks like it might end the game with a 10-point lead in the 4th quarter, but the Chiefs get the ball right back and get the same result. This time, it's a Marcus Allen run to the outside, and Michael Stewart just flat-out takes the ball out of his hands for a fumble force and recovery. What was that moment like when you guys maybe realized 10-point lead, ball in our possession, about 6-7 minutes to go, I have to imagine total jubilation at that point, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, turnovers win that game for us, man. The JB interception, man, that was huge. You know, they're going down and he makes a huge play right there. But then, I don't know, I was watching that clip and they said that Marcus Allen fumble might be overturned in today's game. You know what I mean? But hey, what a great play by Michael Stewart to get the ball back for us again. And, you know, for those two guys, you know, for Montana to throw an interception and for the great Marcus Allen to fumble right there, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better situation for us, for the two greats to be the ones that end up giving us that win in that game. It was huge, man. But defense came up big for us, man. I was also watching the young Tim Bowens in that game, who was actually having, you know, he was just phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, we saw the greatness coming from him, you know, on the inside of that defensive line, man. And it was just fun to look back at that. But those two plays right there were huge and obviously what we needed at that time of the game.
I know this was your second season in the NFL, Juice. Was this your most memorable game? Was there another one that maybe tops it?
No, this one right here. I mean, there's a couple that I've had some personal stuff in. You know, of course, Danny's 399, 400, 401 game is one of my favorites just because of just a milestone for Danny and, you know, me being a part of three touchdowns in that game against the Saints. But for playoffs, man, the intensity, it doesn't get any better than that. You know, playing against Montana, Marcus Allen, and Dale Carter, the cornerback, Derek Thomas. I mean, the Chiefs were – they were pegged to win it all as well that year. So it was just a fun atmosphere. I mean, the stadium – and that's the way I remember the stadium. You know, the stadium's kind of gotten away from that, you know, with the team not being, you know, this year we've been really good, but, you know, with just partial stadium with the crowd. But I'm so used to that stadium being so loud and full of Dolph fans and just, you know, being hardly ever being able to hear anything. You know, those are the great days, man. And that day there, it was just unbelievable. Like 1 o'clock or, I don't know, afternoon game, and it was just so loud and the energy was amazing. So, yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to watch the 70,000 screaming Dolphins fans on a Sunday afternoon. I think this game and then also the 2000 wild card playoffs over the Colts, there was just this real intense back and forth. And I mentioned you on the highlight, like there was a fist pump or like just kind of getting pumped up. Like I love those moments where every single play is so crucial and so important to the outcome of the game. So the Dolphins win this one 27-17, go on next week, and we drop one to the Chargers at the buzzer with a missed field goal. But still a fun season to watch. OJ, a big part of that. OJ, what's coming up next here on the Fish Tank Podcast? I know we had Charles Jordan in the tank last week. What's coming up next week for you guys?
Yeah, we've got a Lindo Mari coming up, man. And it's been great to get Lindo on because of what Jason Sanders has been doing as a kicker, man. I mean, he's just been so good for us and so clutch for us, man. I thought, you know, that we thought it would only be fitting to get Lindo on, who was the same way for us as a kicker, man. And Lindo's story is so great. You know, how he ended up being in football, from going from soccer and seeing that, you know, whoever the kids they had on his high school team could barely kick the football. And he said he could do better than that. How he practiced, you know, kicking with, you know, on rough fields and just trying to hit a pole, you know, it's just an amazing story, man. And then the journey that he had coming back home, you know, a kid that was born and raised down here, coming back home to kick for the Dolphins. It was a special one, man. You know, I didn't know what to expect from Lindo. He's usually a pretty quiet guy, but he had a lot to say on our podcast.
Hey, when a kicker arrives, or maybe, you know, you come to a team and they have a kicker, does he have to, like, make a certain amount of kicks or big kicks before he gets the respect of the rest of the team? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, man, it really is hard. It's hard to get the respect of the team until you get in a game situation. And you don't get a game situation, you know, even preseason really doesn't count. You got to get in there in a fourth quarter, you know, game on the line, and you got a 47-yarder. When it's muddy outside or you're playing on the dirt infield from the Marlins or something like that, you got to knock one of those down to get that street cred. You know, you, for me as a return guy, I had to return my kickoff against the Atlanta Falcons as a number one pick in 93 in order for them to even appreciate me or accept me. So it's even worse for a kicker when you got to wait till you get to a regular season game with the game on the line.
Well, like you mentioned, fortunately, we've had Lindo Mari and Jason Sanders, two of the best in franchise history here for your Dolphins over the last couple of decades. So look forward to that on the Fish Tank Podcast. OJ, it's been a fun podcast as always, man. I appreciate your time today, and we'll see you soon, my friend.
You got it, Trav. Thanks for having me, buddy.
And away he goes. OJ McDuffie, former Dolphins receiver, one of my favorite guests here on the podcast every single week. We get to have him and Seth. We'll have Seth back next week. He was not able to jump on the podcast with us this time. We'll get him back next week. But in the meantime, you guys check out the Fish Tank and the Audible podcast, as well as the rest of the week of podcast here on Drive Time. We have plenty of good content for you guys with Byron Jones. Highly, highly encourage you to check out that podcast from Thursday. The game preview on Wednesday, plenty of good stats and details in there. All the stuff you're looking for with your Miami Dolphins coverage here on Drive Time and on MiamiDolphins.com. In the meantime, that's going to be my time. Subscribe, rate, review the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Wingfield NFL, at Miami Dolphins. We mentioned the podcast. We mentioned the website. We'll see you guys back here on Sunday night for a game recap of Dolphins and Chiefs with myself and John Kangemi. Until then, fins up.